This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hello, heaters. Welcome to a slightly belated episode of Half Street High Heat. We all had some crazy life stuff happening last week, so sorry we didn't get you guys an episode, but thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate each and every one of you listening. I am Amanda, and I'm joined by my Abecedarius co-hosts, Ryan, whom you can find on Twitter at We Are All Shack, and Tyler, who's filling in for Nick tonight. You can find him on Twitter at non-roster invite. Please be sure to find all of us there. And also don't forget to follow the show if you don't already at Half Street High Heat. That's half ST High Heat. And of course, the website at the same address, halfsthighheat.com, which is updated regularly with tons of outtakes from the podcast, fantastic articles, and lots more. And one more plug, don't forget to visit the YouTube channel where Trey is killing it as always. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Did you both have yourselves muted just now?
Yes. Yeah, but doing good. Finally just finished the semester and
congrats.
About to graduate on Saturday. So a lot of life stuff's been going on recently, but
big deal. Congratulations.
That's awesome. Yes, thank you. Yeah, no, so just been a bit busy, but other than that, doing pretty good. The Nats, on the other hand, are not.
Yeah, better than the Nets, like, which is an admittedly low bar. The floor, one Mr. Nick might say. What about you, Ryan? What's new?
I don't even remember the last time we did one of these.
I know, it's been a while.
It's been a while. I miss hearing your big words that I don't understand what they mean. So that's fun that they're back. You know, life's good. Life's happening. I'm an absolute rock in slow pitch softball. I'm putting up Aaron Judge numbers out there. Just absolutely unreal. Our team's in first place. We are 6-0, by the way. Rained out tonight, though. Gorgeous night. But now playing softball, that stinks. But yeah, you know, just doing better than the Nats.
Well, I guess we'll just be grateful that your game got rained out so you got to do the podcast with us. Otherwise, you would not be here. You'd be out there, Aaron, judging it up.
Just nothing but dingers.
Well, speaking of dingers, that's a perfect segue into this episode's quick pitch. A couple of episodes ago, we did our quick pitch on whether or not we preferred the deadened balls or the juiced balls. So this is kind of tangentially related to that. Is the lower offense that we're seeing this year good or bad for baseball? And if they keep using the balls they're using, is that here to stay?
I think there's a lot of factors going on. We've seen an unusually cold spring throughout the entire country. There's been a lot of very, very cold 40-degree, 50-degree games. There's been a lot of bad weather. That leads to less offense as well. The ball is playing a factor as well. But I don't think the dead-end baseballs are truly that bad. Like, offense is going to start ticking up. The Astros have hit 7 home runs in through the first 4 innings against the Red Sox today. As the weather gets warmer, even with these dead-end baseballs, offense is going to pick back up. But I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, before, baseball just became a 3 true outcome game: home run, walk, strikeout, basically every at bat. Now we'll finally get more. You know, guys are hitting singles, guys are hitting doubles. Like, Cesar Hernandez, like, third in baseball in hits randomly, but there's more outcomes, which is good. The runs in the offensive production will go up as, you know, we're mid-May right now. Things are finally starting to heat up temperature wise. That'll help offense as well. But I actually don't think the dead balls are that big of a deal. I think people kind of need to stop complaining.
You think that's not the biggest factor? Because I looked up some numbers here. It says the lowest ever for an entire season batting average against was .237. And that was the year of the pitcher in 1968. And, you know, we've seen a lot of years, especially when they had the baseballs juiced, where offense was kind of crazy. Right now through April, so these numbers have changed a little bit as we've gotten into May, but through the end of April, they were at .231 batting average across the league. So it's definitely, I think the cold weather is certainly a factor. You always see lower numbers early in the season. And even in the fall, when the weather cools off again, it's still more humid in the fall than it is in the spring. But I also think that the, you know, the labor dispute that kept everybody away from the teams and away from, you know, their batting cages. And I'm sure they were doing their own practice, but it's not the same as working with your team and your trainers probably is playing a pretty big factor in it as well. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both you guys. I was actually about to make that same point, Amanda, with the lockout and everything. Hitters didn't have as much time, you know, to get their timing by the time the season started. You know, even professional hitters, they need this time, you know, to get their swings right, get their timing down. And I think that was more of a reason we were seeing a lot of slow starts than the dead ball. But like Ryan was saying, I don't think it's necessarily like the dead ball that's the problem. I think it's more of the lack of consistency between seasons with the ball. Because in 2019, everybody was complaining about the juice ball. Now everybody's complaining about the dead ball. So I think
stick with what you're doing.
Yeah,
so everybody can get used to it. Because if you're trying to you know, get more launch angle because the balls are juiced and then suddenly the balls are dead and these are all dying on the track, it's not really fair to the hitters.
Right. Yeah. No. And like the theories, the rumors, whether it's been proven or not, that they're using different balls for like Friday night series or Sunday night baseball. I just think, like, you know, like I was saying before, it's really just the lack of consistency in the ball rather than it's the juiced ball, it's the dead ball.
Yeah, and they've invited that kind of speculation by continuing to screw around with it while pretending they aren't.
Yeah, I will say, and the though, players
the
players have made comments. I think it was Pete Alonso that said straight up that MLB doctors the ball year in and year out.
Yeah, and he's not wrong. They have said in this year that everything is exactly the same. It's all the post-2021 manufacturing, but, you know, nobody believes them because they've been full of crap for years. So,
well, technically wouldn't be wrong because they went back to the dead end balls for the playoffs in 2021. Mm-hmm. So they're technically not wrong with that.
But they did say in 2021 season, they, because of the supply chain issues they had with the pandemic stuff, that they had to use a combination of the balls from 2020 and the balls from 2021. So they were different. So you just never knew what you were going to get. So,
roulette.
You know, it's yeah, exactly. And I will say though, for me, at least I am surprised a little bit by the lower offense. I even given all the factors we've just discussed with the DH for the first time, I expected there to be a little bit more offense and also the crackdown on sticky stuff. You know, I thought, okay, we're going to see a little bit of a, you know, a turnaround where the pitchers aren't quite as dominant and hitters are going to be able to, you know, hit a little better. And maybe that will prove to be true when we look at these averages over the course of this whole season. But right now I'm a little bit surprised.
Sorry, I was looking something up, but yeah, I mean, the numbers are going to correct themselves. That's kind of just how things work. And it's going to happen over the dog days of summer. It's really interesting. Tyler, you mentioned it. They're 100% using different balls for primetime games. You can't change my mind. I know it's conspiracy, but it's a conspiracy. I am 100%.
Oh yeah. They definitely
are. Plus, love conspiracy theories. So,
oh, who doesn't? They're fun.
It's like no brainer for them to change the balls for Friday night games and other nationally televised games for more offense and more views.
Just makes me so upset. The fact that they've been screwing with it at all really pisses me off, because one of the most fantastic things about baseball, one of the things I love the most, is being able to go back. Obviously eras change over long periods of time, but being able to go back reasonably long periods of time and compare players and talk about, you know, oh, there's the recency bias and everybody thinks this guy's the greatest, but if you go back and look at this guy's numbers, you can't really do that when they keep changing the ball, because it's not a fair comparison, especially when they're not telling you when they're changing the ball, and you have to just kind of speculate. And I don't know, I think it sucks, and it kind of ruins the integrity of the game and the integrity of the stats and the records, which is one of the things that baseball nerds like ourselves and anyone who's listening to this podcast really enjoy about the sport.
Agreed.
All right, let's move on. Ryan, I am so looking forward to the weekend review. You said you missed my large understandable words. I miss the weekend review when I don't get to have it regularly. So hit us.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done one of these, and we got a lot to talk about, as it was a very exciting first month for the 2022 season. Baseball runs through New York and LA. For the first time in MLB history, all four New York and LA teams are in first place for their respective divisions. Mets were the first team to 20 wins, but the Yankees have surmounted themselves as the best team in baseball. They have a four-game lead over everyone else. Yankees team WRC Plus is 127.
Ooh.
That's the highest team WRC plus to 30 plus games since 1886. The Yankees offense is cooking and so is their pitching as their top five in most stats. Angels have the first solo no-hitter of the season in rookie Detmers. Angels are off to a hot start, and most of their best hitters haven't even clicked yet. The Astros are now on their tail after they've won 12 of 13 after blowing out the Red Sox. That'll be 13 of 14. Dodgers team ERA was 2.06 through 26 games. That was the lowest team ERA through the first month since the 1978 A's. Seven teams are on pace to win 100 games through the first month. All of them are in the top 10 payroll, except the Brewers. Five teams are on pace to lose over 100 games. Red Sox are the only one that's in the top 15 of league payroll. The Cincinnati Reds threw a no-hitter. The only issues, they lost. The Pirates are now the sixth team ever to record no hits in a game and win. Matt Harvey is suspended 60 games for his role in distributing a banned substances to the least. In last place are the 12 and 15 Nats. Talk about them in a second. In fourth place are the 16 and 20 Braves, who are struggling early on once again. They lost 2-3 to the San Diego Padres. They lost the first game to the Brewers because of a pass ball and lost 1-0. They had the easiest schedule in baseball through the first month, and they're four games under 500. So their schedule can only get harder. In third place are the 16 and 19 Marlins. After being above 500 for the first time in ages, they're back below. And they're 4-6 in the last 10. They lost back-to-back series, but thankfully for them, they play the Nationals. And we need to ride a ship, you play the Nats. In second place are the 17 and 18 Phillies. They say a 3-goal lead is the most dangerous lead in hockey. Well, then the 7-1 lead is the most dangerous lead in baseball because the Phillies have blown two such leads in the past week. Lucky for them, they won one of them. They were a blown save away from sweeping the Dodgers in LA. Good news is, though, their offense is cooking in a large part due to Bryce Harper, who is having yet another MVP caliber season. Philly's offensive ranks through the first month, first in slugging in OPS, second most runs in NL, and their second in batting average in the NL. They take on the San Diego Padres in San Diego. In first place are the 24 and 13 Mets. Max Scherzer does not like when people try to throw a pitch before him. They still have yet to lose a series this season, and they look to continue that play as they take on the Cardinals in San Diego. Or is it in New York? Doesn't matter. This has been your week in review.
I hate that the Mets seem to be for real. It makes me so upset.
Yeah, the Mets, that's something I really overlooked. The Mets have the perfect team for the dead baseballs. And it's really annoying because they 100% lucked into it. They have a lineup of people that doesn't rely on the home run, don't strike out a lot, and they walk a decent amount. Like, they have the perfect lineup for it. And so they'll have a top 10 lineup the whole season. This pitching staff is legit. They're easily winning over 90 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mets are good. I hate to say it, but they're good.
I know. I really hope that they met at some point, but it doesn't look like it's imminent, which, whatever. I mean, I keep trying to say, oh, Max Scherzer's my favorite National ever, and I'm just going to be happy for him, but it turns out I'm not, in fact, happy for him. I'm a petty woman, apparently.
The Mets, like, I mean, I think this is the most, like, complete Mets team that they've had in a while, though. I mean, their lineup, like, I wouldn't say is as impressive as some other teams, but it gets the job done. They've been actually giving their pitchers run support, which has been a huge problem in the past. As we know, DeGrom, you know, had like a 1.5 ERA, but was like 7-7 that one year, whatever it was. I think, you know, as long as the Mets don't start metting, which, you know, as we know, is always a possibility.
Yeah, I just want somebody to punch somebody in the face and the whole thing to go up in flames.
Yeah, I really do think, though, if the Mets make the playoffs, that they're probably going to have a pretty deep October run just with their pitching. And they just seem built for it this year.
They have a top five pitching staff without Jacob.
Without DeGrom. That's what's insane. Like, if he comes back, like, you do not want to face that rotation at all because you were losing. There's just no way you're winning a short series against that rotation or a seven-game series either.
Yeah, or probably any series at all.
Yeah.
Well, that takes us to the first series we're going to talk about since we haven't had an episode in a little while. We're going to go back to the Mets series. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't The Nats did manage to win one game, which seems to be their MO right now. They take one game of a series. They lost the first game, which was a 4-2 loss. It was Edwards Jr. took the loss. That's one of the things I want to talk about this game. He has a 27 ERA following that performance. That was exciting. It was a pretty good start from Corbin, who issued 4 walks, but got out of it with no runs. What were your thoughts on, I guess that's game one I'm talking about specifically, but what are your thoughts on either that game or the series in general?
Yeah, that was pretty good to see from Corbin. You mentioned the 4 walks, but most importantly, he was finally getting swings and misses. He had 40 swings and he got 11 whiffs. There's been plenty of times when we've done these episodes and we're like, oh, Patrick Corbin had 3 swings and misses in 5 innings. Was finally missing bats. You know, he got guys fouling off pitches. His velocity was down a little bit. It was up on most of his pitches. He got swing and misses. That was probably the best thing to see. And that was really, really encouraging. Unfortunately, the pitching staff stinks from top to bottom. Not really sure why Carl Edwards Jr. is up. He did get 5 whiffs, but he got teed off on and everything went to shit. So that's okay, because I want the first pick. But yeah, I mean, this was just the typical series you see from the Nats. They have that one win where they'll score a lot of runs and people are like, wow, this team's playing better than I thought. We're a good baseball team because they scored 12 and then they'll score 3 runs in their next 8 games combined. And they have that when they have that big come from behind win. Every series is the same right now with this team.
Yeah, it is pretty Groundhog Day-esque. What about you, Tyler? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Corbin looked better. It's been encouraging to see. Again, just pray he gets his value up enough where some team takes a chance on him, even if you have to eat like 75% of the contract. Carl Edwards Jr. is hashtag not good. You know, if you're in the Nats AAA system, not even up with the big league bullpen, you're not good. Yeah,
doing pretty well at AAA. I mean, they thought, hey, maybe it's worth giving him a shot at the big league level and see what we got. But
I understand it didn't go well. Yeah, I mean, that was pretty rough. But like Ryan was saying, the Nats offense is so deceiving because they'll have that one game where they will blow out the other team and then it'll like completely juice their stats. Like, I think they still lead the league in hits, like, which is kind of crazy for like a 12-26 team or whatever they are. But I mean, I don't know. This team like is like ass, but like just so weird at the same time. Like just like they're not.
It's weird ass
game to game. It's very odd.
And this game again had 2 throwing errors, and we'll get into that more as we talk about the last couple series. The defense is uber stinky. It's really, really bad and frustrating. Like, it's one thing to see, okay, your team's not great, you're going to lose games. It's another thing to see, like, just little league level bad
baseball. Oh, my God.
Bad throwing errors in defense.
How are we not talking about that incident where, like, Soto just ran the third on ball in front of him?
We're going to talk about it.
That was insane. I was like, my jaw was on the ground.
You know, I tweeted something, I think right after that happened, I tweeted like, oh my God, this team is so embarrassing. And somebody jumped in my comments and was like, this is a shitty thing to say. And I was like, well, it was a shitty play. So I don't know. But yeah, somebody got mad at me on Twitter. And I'm pretty vanilla on Twitter. I was like, wow, people usually yell at me on Twitter.
I love when people get mad at me on Twitter.
I need to call Ryan and commiserate. Get from there. So let's talk about the next game. This is the next game. Game 2 is what when they actually got a win. It was a good come from behind win. They were down 3-0, but that was the only bright spot of the series. Sanchez had a pretty rough first inning, gave up 3 runs, and then that was it that they gave up for the rest of the game, and they scored 8. So this was definitely a much better performance than the previous one. So in this game, let's see, we had Sanchez 5.1. So, you know, not a deep start at all, but 6 hits, 3 runs, all earned, only 1 strikeout. So Sanchez is, I mean, he kind of held it together after the first inning and got through 4.1 more, but I've not been impressed with what I'm seeing from Sanchez.
Yeah, you're not alone there. This has kind of been like Sanchez's MO. He'll have a couple innings where he shines and you're like, okay, you know, this guy could be the real deal because the stuff is there. He just can't put anything together. And we're kind of seeing that. We'll talk about his more recent start in a little bit. But like, it's just not there. The people are like, well, maybe he just doesn't have the injuries. Maybe he can succeed. Well, he's healthy this year. It's not been very good. He's not getting swings and misses. He's giving up a lot of hard contact. His break on his pitches isn't good. His spin rate is down a lot. His velocity is down a good amount as well. And he's missing over the heart of the plate. You miss over the heart of the plate when you're not exactly, you know, a hard throwing pitcher, things are going to go bad. And that's what we kind of see. And fortunately for him, the offense was able to pick it back up. Breaks my heart to say, but Nelson Cruz hit one about 475 feet. Just absolutely devastating that that happened to me and my family. Please respect my privacy about that. But yeah, that was a really good win.
Yes, yeah. It was. Did you watch that one or read the box score at least?
I was at my local, you know, Whole Foods doing Whole Food things, and my phone vibrated. I was like, that's weird. So I looked at it and I just saw it and I just fell to my knees and started sobbing, punching a bag of chips in front of me, and I had to get escorted out. It was really heartbreaking.
Oh, well, I am sorry for your devastation, and I hope that you're doing better during this difficult time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I fell to my knees as well because the Nats won a game and I need them to lose every game this year. But yeah, Sanchez, you know, for a guy that you signed to a minor league deal, I mean, you'll take 5.1 innings and three runs. But like Ryan was saying, like you can just tell, like he's kind of all over the place. And I think he looks a little bit better than he actually is just because this rotation is dog outside of Josiah Gray. So yeah,
our expectations are very, very low.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, he gave it enough for the win, obviously. And then it was great to see Nelson Cruz, who's been, sorry, Shaq, for the trigger word right there. But he's been heating up a little bit, finally getting his bat going. And, you know, we need that so we can actually get some like semblance of value for him at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I still don't know that he's made himself trade bait.
Yeah, right now hopefully. It's still a little rough. But
despite Shaq's emotional difficulties with it, hopefully he continues to improve. And if for nothing else, then to just give a little bit more depth to that lineup, which is about an inch deep right now. It's not good. Okay. So since that win was difficult for you to deal with, I have good news for you about game three of that series. That was a 4-1 loss. This was a Don who had, you know, a pretty fun outing in LA against the Angels, where he retired Trout, Otani, and Rendon in order. That was pretty cool to see. This performance did not echo that one. He only went 3.2 innings, gave up three hits, three earned runs, five walks on only two strikeouts. It was a pretty ugly performance, and dropped his record to 1-6. The bullpen actually in relief wasn't bad. Only one run given up for the rest of the way. Ramirez, Edwards Jr., Finnegan, and Cishek all pitched, and only Cishek gave up one earned run, but they still lost because the offense can't score.
Yeah, Yoan Adone is just not ready for the major leagues, and I'm kind of surprised that they have let him stay up for this long. I mean, of course, you know, we're not competing for anything this year, and you can let him live and learn at the major league level, but I mean, five walks in this start, I mean, you're just not going to be successful at the major league level if you can't locate. He has been doing better tonight in the Marlins start. With he had no walks tonight, which is good.
But he finished his outing. I don't have the game on in front of me.
Yeah, because Cishek was, I think he went about four innings and he had like 2 Ks, zero walks, something like that. But yeah, I said before that they should give him a couple tune-up starts in AAA, just to kind of get his command back and, you know, kind of trust in his stuff way more, because his stuff is pretty good. I mean, he gets whiffs, you know, when he can actually locate. It's just like, he's such a young guy and he's still so raw that I really just don't feel like he's there yet for the majors. But like, once he gets that stuff dialed in and can actually control his stuff, I think he'll be a pretty good back end starter.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. And I really struggle with this that we've talked about this a lot on the show, even before the season started, is do you, where's that line between playing the young guys to give them that, you know, hey, it doesn't matter. They can struggle at the major league level and face big league hitters and, or, you know, pitchers, depending on who you're talking about, but where's that line between let the guys play at the major league level and get that experience in a season where it doesn't matter what the outcome of the games turns out to be. And you don't want to ruin a guy's confidence, let him go back down to AAA and get himself ready before he comes to the big league level. And I think Adone is a perfect example of that, trying to find where that line is. And I don't know. I mean, obviously the Nats have decided to keep him up, but, you know, is he a guy who would do better if you set him back down, or is it better to just let him struggle here? What do you think, Tyler?
Oh, sorry. I mean, it's really tough to say because you're not a competitive team, but if he keeps going out there and just, like, you know, keeps walking the bases loaded or keeps getting shelled or whatever, I mean, you just can't really let him keep going through that. I mean, you know, like I said before, tonight was a more positive sign, and I would give him another start after tonight. But I mean, it's just the consistency hasn't been there. Like with someone with Josiah Gray, like he got lit up against the Astros, but that was really only one inning, and he's had a lot more good than bad compared to Yoan Adone. Like it's sort of that kind of situation.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough one. I don't know. Like I said, I kind of, as a philosophical point, I find myself falling on one side sometimes and on the other side other times. He is an interesting case though, because, you know, you don't want him to start feeling like, okay, I can't compete at this level because he keeps having bad starts, but then he keeps having starts good enough that you think, okay, well, let's keep him. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. The good news is it doesn't matter what we think. The Nats will do what they want. So let's back off from talking about the Marlins series that's going on right now and go back one more series to the Astros. After the Mets, that was the next one. Yet another bad first inning from Gray in that game. He was roughed up for 5 runs. It wasn't pretty. They only gave up 1 for the rest of the way, but a familiar story. They could only score 1 run. So that bad first inning turned out to be the story of the game. They couldn't dig themselves back out of that. Gray did go 6 innings in this one, gave up 6 runs. They were all on him. 5 strikeouts, 3 homers he gave up in that game. It was not a great outing for Gray. And our offense was, I think, anemic is a maybe too generous way to describe it. There were some hits scattered around. Cruz had 2 hits on that one. Ryan just stepped away for a second. So Tyler, I'll go to you again. It's a good thing since we have to say nice things about Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, I truly think that Josiah Gray was tipping pitches in the first inning against the Astros. I mean, it was just one after the other.
It was like T-ball.
Yeah, I mean, it was teeing off. I didn't see that first inning because I was away, but I just saw all the notifications coming in. And I was just like, oh, my God. But the fact that he was still able to go 6 innings after that and only gave up 1 solo home run after that nightmare inning is really impressive. And he completely, I mean, the line still isn't pretty, obviously, with the 6 earned runs, but he completely turned that start around from the first inning.
He did. And
he was facing an elite offense, too. And, you know, he was generating swings and misses after that, you know, first inning when they were on him. And that's what really leads me to believe that he was tipping pitches in the first inning.
Yeah, that actually would make a lot of sense why it was like a completely different game for him in the first inning. And then the rest of the way, he just gave up that 1 in the third and zeros the rest of the way. So again, you know, we've said it a million times, the outcome doesn't matter. The progress is what does matter. And for Gray, I do think we're seeing that. He's sitting at, we'll say a 4.34 ERA after that outing, which, you know, is not terrific, but for a young guy, you know, finding his way. I like what I've been seeing from Gray. I do feel like we're seeing incremental progress.
Yeah, start inflated his ERA a decent amount, but you just really have to look for the flash with him. And something else this year that he's been doing, taking a step forward, is he's been going deeper into games. Mm-hmm. Last year, I think it was a lot more 4-inning starts, like middle of fifth he was exiting. He's doing a lot more 5-inning, 6-inning starts this year, which is great to see, because I think last year he was on an innings limit or something. So that might have had something to do with it. But I mean, it's great to see him go deeper into games and still, you know, have his stuff, you know, in the fifth inning and the sixth inning and not running out of gas. Cause we've seen a lot with him, you know, he'll be great through the first couple innings and then he'll hit the wall and he'll give up a couple home runs or and start walking guys. Or it's, so it's really about just maintaining his stamina and just being, or just going at hitters like from start to finish and just keeping like the same tone, keeping the same pace the whole time.
You know who's not going deep into games? Eric Fetty.
Yep. That's the name of his game. He refuses to go more than like five innings.
I know. Well, in this next one, which is game two of the Astros series, he went only four, which at this point in the season, you know, early in the season, it was kind of like, okay, they had a shortened spring training. They're not going to go deep. But I really feel like we're reaching the point now where it's like, okay, you're stretched out. You need to go, if you're a starting pitcher, you need to be going at least five innings. Even six to me is, you know, okay, great. You went six. Like if you can get seven or eight out of your starters once in a while, that'd be amazing. I wonder what that's like. Fetty gave
must
up.
Must be nice.
Must be nice. I can't watch Max Scherzer pitch anymore. It makes me too sad. He gave up five hits in four innings, three runs, all earned, issued three walks, but did get six strikeouts. It wasn't great. Rogers actually got the win in this one. He only came in for one inning of relief, but he did get the win. Cishek gave up four hits. He's been really terrible lately.
Yeah. I mean,
I feel like he's pitches like every single night and it's always bad. Like he's
not been great this year, but with Eric Fetty, I mean, I feel like I just say this every year about Eric Fetty. He doesn't trust his stuff enough. And that's why he just nibbles and nibbles and nibbles and it shoots his pitch count up. And you know, they talk about it literally every start, you know, when he's on the mound, like, oh, Eric Fetty's nibbling
he's
again.
He's got to go right out, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Here he goes from another 0-2 count to a 3-2 count. Like it's the same story, like nearly every start. Like if the guy would just trust in his stuff, he would be a better pitcher. But I mean,
and now that he's in like his 93rd year on the team, you would think by now he would trust his stuff more.
Yeah,
I feel like he's been on the team forever. I'd have to look up when he joined the Nats, but it seems like it's been.
And yeah, the beginning of the season, it looked like, you know, I think he had a pretty decent start. It looked like he was actually attacking guys, you know, earlier this year. And then recently he's just gone back to nibbling. Like I've seen him get like, I don't think Eric Fetty's ever going to be like that big strikeout pitcher, obviously. But, you know, when he locates and attacks guys, he'll get those ground balls and he'll get those like weak flyouts, but he just doesn't trust his stuff. And then that's why, you know, he gets the walks and then he'll give up that meatball right down the middle. I mean, it's just same thing with him.
Yeah, it definitely is the same story over and over again. Yet another fielding error, this time on Yadiel Hernandez. Just feel like I need to throw in those errors.
Oh yeah, he can't play the outfield to save his life.
At least one every game.
It is at this point.
Yeah, it's bad. So the next game of the Astros series, game three, the rubber match, was an 8-0 shutout loss. Corbin actually had a pretty good outing up until the seventh inning. I really feel like I know we just talked about how pitchers need to go deeper into games, and I guess obviously Davey feels the same way, but he had had a pretty good outing. He gave up just two in the fifth and one in the sixth. And then it seemed to me after he had struggled for two consecutive innings, there was no reason to trot him back out for the seventh. And he gave up four in the seventh. So
yeah, this start is on Davey. Yeah. Davey left him in far too long. It was clear he was done. Everybody knew he was done. Except Davey.
I couldn't believe that he put him back out for the seventh. I was what are we doing?
I wasn't shocked because I've seen this movie thousands of times with Davey. But, I mean, like, it's just the putting guys back in when they're clearly out of gas. And then they immediately just go to giving up runs. I mean,
and I get he didn't have any pitches. He only had 86 when he came out. I mean, yeah. It wasn't like it was high pitch count. But he was obviously struggling.
Oh, he was obviously faltering. Yeah, and when you're facing a lineup as good as the Astros, they're going to start picking up when you're faltering. And they're going to start, you know, hammering you a little bit harder. So, yeah, I think Corbin had a great start until those two innings. But he shouldn't even have been out there for those two innings anyway.
Yeah, it would have been better to have a shorter start and have him. You know, have for me at this point, again, we keep talking about how the outcome doesn't matter. and it really doesn't. But getting Corbin back on track, either to be a trade candidate or for the sake of this team in, you know, the following seasons, would be amazing. And letting him, you know, have a good start and then, you know, a decent start and then go out and just completely fall apart again is not in his best interest or the team's best interest. It just didn't make any sense to me at all. Verlander went out and got up to 107 pitches in this outing, which, you know, I guess he's pretty stretched out at 39 years old. That is an awfully impressive amount of stamina. He was touching 98 also, so he's got his velocity back, which is interesting to see. I can't stand the Astros, so I don't pay real close attention, but I was definitely impressed with what we saw from Verlander. He didn't go deep into the game, only 5 innings, but 107 pitches is a lot in 5 innings.
Yeah, I think he had that first inning where he was kind of struggling with command a little bit. And then, of course, you know, the Nats don't capitalize like they love to. And, you know, a veteran starter is going to lock in after that. And you got to, if you don't get him early, you're not going to get them. I mean, that's just how it works with guys who have been in this game for as long as Verlander has mm-hmm. and have been as good as he has for this long. I mean, but he looks like, you know, vintage Verlander, and it's pretty impressive, especially, you know, like you said, at his age of 39 and coming off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I didn't expect as much from him this year. I kind of thought he's cooked, but you know, maybe he's not cooked again. 107 yeah. pitches in 5
the
innings.
Astros lab was not going to let him get cooked.
I know, exactly. I did mean in the, when we talked about game 2, to mention Yadiel Hernandez, and I forgot to, who has been just wow, really, really good. Like, I don't know what I expected from him. I guess I didn't really have any expectations from him, but he is hitting 330 yeah. right now, and one of the best offensive pieces on this team, which maybe says more about this team than about Yadiel Hernandez, but I do feel like he deserved a little bit of a shout out.
Yeah, Yadiel has been, I mean, there's nothing really to say. I don't think any of us could have expected this, but I think the smart thing to do, the Nats will not do this, but trade Yadiel while he's still hitting like this and get a decent return for a 34-year-old while you still can, because he's clearly not part of this team's future, but you know, the Nats are
they
gonna
are
plug
not
him in
going his, to do that.
Yeah. You know, he's going to be the starting DH after Nelson Cruz is traded for the rest of the season, and we'll probably be back next season as well. So mm-hmm. that's kind of a bummer
before
when he
transitions to his spot in the front office. Yeah. Move on to the Marlins series, which is the current one. We just mentioned a little bit about game 2, which is still going on now. We're recording on, what is today? Tuesday. It's Tuesday evening. So that game is still in progress. But the one game they have played in this series was not wonderful. Sanchez was pretty bad. And the Nats lost 8-2. Let's see. Go find his Alcantara, on the other hand, went 8 innings and completely owns the Nats, only gave up 3 hits. Sanchez went 3.2 innings, gave up 8 hits and 4 runs, only striking out 2 and issuing 3 walks. It was pretty ugly. And we were just talking about the last series when he started, and it was kind of okay. This one was less okay than the previous one.
Yeah, he straight up got shelled in the start. I mean, the Marlins were just all over him, like hard contact into the gap, hard contact everywhere. Like it was pretty ugly to watch.
Yes, it was ugly to watch indeed. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this series.
It's four nothing in the eighth right now.
Brian's back. 4-0 in the eighth. So we just have to make sure we watch the ninth for the comeback heroics.
Yeah. The Marlins are never mind. We have second and third, no outs right now. Robles singled, Cesar Hernandez
second
doubled,
and third, no outs, so we will Soto's score up. One
Uh-oh.
Or less.
Here we go. Uh-oh. Here come the Nats. Don't let them get hot, baby.
Don't let them get hot.
Oof. Hot is relative, I suppose. So there has been some defense in this series, particularly last night, that I feel like needs to be talked about. Right. Some base running maybe is even more necessary to talk about. There was the play where Soto, for some reason, ran for third when he shouldn't have and got caught in a pickle, and then they tagged him out, and then Bell's behind him, streaking for second. They throw and it gets past the second baseman, but he's backed up by somebody right behind him. And Bell apparently doesn't notice that, runs for third, gets thrown out by a mile. So two outs at third base on the same play.
Well, Amanda, I'm going to need you to get your affairs in order. That was the Mets series. I know the Nats play really good baseball and don't mess up a lot. So there's no way for you
to have remembered that. You're right. That was one game back. It wasn't yesterday. It was the day before.
The one that happened, that was, I think it's better we don't talk about that situation. The one that just happened in the Marlins series was a ground ball to shortstop that ended up scoring three runs.
That one was pretty bad. Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't see that live. Like, I didn't see it till later on, but I got an ESPN notification about the Nats. I was like, an ESPN notification about the Nats. What the hell do they do? And it's like, Nats fans, look away. Washington strings together a brutal comedy of errors, allowing Marlins to score three in a must-see defensive blunder. I was like, okay, that sounds
that's
about right.
The title of the.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the fifth time this year.
I hate it.
At least the fifth time this year we've gone the comedy of errors.
Yeah, it's bad. We're all over MLB errors this season.
Yeah, you're right. And thank you for correcting me, Ryan. I did mess up my completely ridiculous plays that I can't believe actually happened in real life. Yeah, that one was I was watching that happen and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I actually stopped and like rewound it a couple of times to rewatch it. Like I needed to understand the mechanics of like, how did this actually occur? Did this really just happen in real life? And it did. It did. The Nats. It's hard because you expect them to be like, okay, the lineup's not going to be good. They don't have the pitching. But this kind of stuff is just like, I mean, what are they actually thinking out there? This is bonehead, little league kind of errors. And I don't understand. These guys may not be the best players in MLB, but they are MLB players. I just don't understand how we're seeing what we're seeing from them. Night in and night out with the errors.
Are they MLB players?
I mean,
we may never know.
The world may never know. So yeah. I just felt like we needed to remark upon that, even though it's probably something we should all forget and never speak of again. So we'll move on from that. Let's talk about pitching. Strasburg and Ross. Updates. Masson, I believe it was Masson Sports. I read an article that they were both through again on the 13th, which was this past Friday. Strasburg threw 27 pitches and reached 92 miles an hour. So that is super encouraging. Ross threw 33 pitches and was touching 95. So they're both working their way back. They are supposed to both after that last throwing session on the 13th, supposed to be moving into like a regular 5-day schedule for throwing to get them on a track to be back with the big club, probably sometime next month. What do you guys think? Who goes down when they come back? Are they going to stay healthy? What do you expect?
I still expect them to come back after the All-Star break. I don't think they're going to come back in June. I think that's a little ambiguous, excuse whatever the word is. It's got to be Adone and Sanchez, right? Like Adone's not ready. Sanchez, both inconsistent. Look at the fact that Gray not going anywhere. Patrick Corbin not going anywhere. Eric Fetty, no options. He's staying. So I feel like that just by default, Adone and Sanchez are the odd man out of the rotation when those two get ready.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely going to be Adone and Sanchez. I'm more optimistic about Joe Ross coming back earlier than Strauss for obvious reasons, but I do think it's going to be more towards the end of June, beginning of July for both of them as well. And it's not like this team like isn't a pennant race or anything and needs help to be called up as soon as possible. I really think they're going to take their time with them, and that's the smart thing to do, you know, coming off injuries like each of them have had. So I think we're going to probably see him sometime in July.
Doesn't it seem weird that they've kind of got them like tied at the hip now? Like why is it that they're on the exact same schedule and they're working through everything together? I mean, they're completely different pitchers on completely, you know, with completely different injuries. It just seems odd to me how every time you hear anything about one, you're hearing the same thing about the other. It's odd. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I've got absolutely no expectations for Strasburg. I have no idea what we're going to see from him. I think this is kind of a make or break it for Ross. Like, if he can't come back from this injury through the rest of this year, I mean, maybe he gets another shot next year, but I feel like his career is on the line at this point. He's not been able to stay healthy and be a consistent part of this team at all.
Yes, I did. And now I was just going to keep
I did too, sorry.
But yeah, you know, I think the team realized they were just both on similar timetables. They're both come back from pretty major injuries. So they're like, you know what? They're just going to have both of them down in Florida doing their thing, rehabbing, and just having them be on the same schedule makes it a little bit easier from a team standpoint. So, I mean, I don't know. It's the Nats. They do a lot of weird things. Nothing they do, really.
Yeah. I mean, nothing really to add to that. I mean, Nats moment. That's all I really have to say. So Strauss was thoracic outlet, and then Joe Ross had the partially torn UCL, right?
He had but then he had like a bone spur or something in mind.
Yeah, I was about to say he had something else too, I thought.
Yeah, I believe it was bone spur. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, loose bodies in the elbow or something. I can't remember the exact. But I know he didn't need another Tommy John. So that's good. All right. So let's talk about Juan Soto. I mean, he's by the measure of regular mortal men, he's been okay. But by his own standards, he's not been very okay. I mean, he's tied for fifth on the team right now with 10 RBIs, and he's only hitting .256. He does lead the majors with 25 walks, but he's really been expanding the strike zone in a way that is not characteristic for him. I pulled a couple numbers because I know how much Shaq loves numbers. 36.3% of the pitches he's seen in this season have been in the zone, which is less than at any other point in his career. I assume if I had to take a guess about why he's expanding the zone in a way he normally doesn't, is that he's just frustrated by not seeing much to hit. But he was seeing 41.6 in the zone last year. And I guess the fact that he's not hitting the off speed very, or the stuff around the edges, the off speed that's, you know, nibbling on the edges of the zone, he's not hitting it as well. So people don't really feel like they have to pitch to him. And of course he has no protection in the lineup, but what are you guys thinking?
So this is very, very simple. And I see a lot of like outrageous takes on this on Twitter, which is very on brand for Twitter. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to do with Juan Soto turning down the contract. People were saying that Soto's struggling because he's frustrated because he turned down the contract.
Such a dumb take.
The worst take I've ever seen in my life, by the way.
Dumb take.
I don't care about RBIs. RBIs are a team stat. When you're hitting second on the bad team, mm-hmm. you're not going to have a lot of RBIs. Yes, he's struggling with runners in scoring position, but that doesn't matter. His WRC plus is 146. That's fine. When you walk a lot, I keep saying this, I'm going to say it again, walking a lot impacts you, okay? He's walking a lot. And when you don't see a lot of pitches inside the strike zone, 65% of the pitches he sees are outside the strike zone. When you're consistently seeing pitches outside, you're going to start expanding the strike zone. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how good your plate vision is. You are going to start expanding the strike zone. That's just how life works. When you start swinging at pitches outside the strike zone, your swing and miss percentage is going to go up. Your strikeout percentage is going to go up. Your hard contact percentage is going to come down, because if you're swinging at pitches outside the zone, you're not making good contact. That's going to lead to higher soft contact. So Soto isn't making as good of hard contact. His swing and miss is up because he's swinging at pitches outside the zone. Why? Because that's all he's getting. It's very, very basic human nature and very basic statistics. And a lot of people keep having these just absurd stats on it, which kind of irritates me. He has no protection.
So you're saying it's the contract is what?
It's 100% the contract. He's very frustrated with himself for saying no to that. Has nothing to do with the fact that almost 70% of the pitches he's seen are outside the strike zone.
Yeah. Well, one more thing before we let Tyler comment on this, I wanted to throw one more stat in here, which I thought was interesting. When he is getting pitches in the zone, he's getting 83.7% of his contact on pitches in the zone, which is the lowest of his career, which is another interesting thing. I feel like maybe the, like you said, Ryan, he's seeing so many outside, he's starting to swing at stuff outside, and it's maybe affecting his contact on the things he's seeing inside the zone.
Yes. I love stats. Thank you for that. When you are used to seeing pitches outside the zone, it affects your mindset. You know, you're going to sometimes be caught off guard by pitches inside the zone. Like, we've seen Soto like take good pitches on two strikes because he was expecting to be outside the zone. We see him swing and miss and be late on pitches he's not. Walking impacts you. And when you're consistently not seeing pitches that hit, it completely changes who you are as a hitter. And we're seeing that for Soto. This is something I brought up last year, and we are now seeing the ramifications of it.
What are your thoughts, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I echo basically everything Ryan was saying. I mean, we have the numbers on hand, but even just with the eye test, you could tell that Juan is swinging at a lot more pitches out of the zone this year, and that's the result of walking a ton. But, I mean, straight up, people need to stop worrying about Juan Soto. Same thing happened last year when he was hitting all those ground balls.
But he was like, he forgot how to hit the ball in the air.
Juan Soto is going to be fine. I mean, he's off to a better start this year than he was last year. I mean, you can pull up his, you know, oh, he's 2 for 26 with runners in scoring position this year. Whatever, honestly. Okay, whatever. He's seeing the ball better than he was last year. But, you know, like Ryan was saying, with all the walks and the lack of protection, he's getting frustrated. And, you know, also being on a team this bad is also going to frustrate him to the point where he's going to try to put the team on his back. And as a result, swing at these pitches, try to make contact with these pitches, just trying to get something going when you're on a team that is like this dog shit. And he feels like that he needs to be the catalyst for it. But I mean, I'm not worried about Soto whatsoever. And I never have been. I mean, you know, you can cite his low batting average, you know, again, the runners and scoring position numbers, but I mean, the guy's going to be fine. I mean, and we all know who he is. Like, so I really don't think it's anything to bat an eye at. You know, hopefully he can adjust, you know, and kind of realize that he's swinging outside the strike zone more. I think I just read an article this morning or yesterday, whenever it is, that he recognizes that he's swinging at more pitches out of the zone and realizes that he has to go back to, you know, who he's always been as a hitter, which is spitting on basically every pitch that just misses the zone. But yeah, he's going to be fine, and he's going to put up another absurd season. And I think all the panic about it is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to say two important stats to help back up Tyler's point. He's a 146 WRC plus. He is 46% better than the league average hitter, and his WOBA is 383. Great is considered 370. He's fine. Like, he's not doing like the, you know, incredible things like, oh, he's hitting like 400 and it's on base at 600. He's still having a fine season.
Only May 17th when we're recording this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Once the calendar gets to June, mid June, then you can start getting concerned about guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. Everybody freaked out last year, and he turned out to have a terrific season where everybody was talking about, you know, potential MVP, which he did not end up winning, but he was in the conversation. So his power is here this year too.
Like, you know, last year he had, it took him until like, I think June to get his first home run at Nats Park. And he already has what, 7-8 home runs this year. I mean, the power is actually here for him this time. And, you know, that's the difference compared to last year with all the ground balls. It's really just about adjusting back into the hitter he was, you know, with his eye and his ability to swing at strikes and then take pitches outside the zone.
And I think it's people are looking at his performance in a vacuum as if being on a completely shitty team with no protection in the lineup doesn't make an enormous difference. I mean, you put this guy in a really good lineup and his numbers would be ridiculous, because what he's doing, he would be seeing so many pitches out of the zone if he had anybody hitting behind him that anybody was afraid of.
If he was in the Dodgers lineup, nobody would be talking about Juan Soto struggling. I mean,
So I think Soto is definitely not looking Soto-esque right now, but we're only like 6 weeks into the season, maybe seven. I have to do the math. You know, all of the caveats apply for it's cold, it's early, blah, blah, blah. He's going to be just fine. And I had not heard any of the stuff people were saying about the contract. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard. All right. Before we finish this episode, we're going to end it the way we always do with our one big thing. Who wants to go first?
I'll get a start here. There is a lot of great baseball going on. Watch it. Watch the Angels. The Angels are the greatest show on turf right now. Mike Trout's doing unreal things. Otani's an absolute freak. Watch other baseball. And I'm not saying that you should watch the illegal streams. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But yeah, there's so many great things happening in baseball right now. There's so many great storylines. You know, it just took until now for everyone in the NLS to not be above 500. Like, there's great things happening. Watch baseball outside what we're seeing in DC, because it's not.
If you like baseball, Washington isn't really the thing you want to watch right now because it's not good baseball. I mean, watch it. I'm not saying don't watch the Nats, but if you want some good baseball, you might have to go a little further afield. What do you got, Ryan? Or Tyler, I mean, we already got Ryan's.
You're good. I mean, I was going to actually say something somewhere. I've been watching other baseball and other teams more than the Nats this season, and I'm perfectly fine with keeping it that way. Ryan mentioned the Angels. I've been watching the Dodgers a lot this season as my fix for good baseball. I enjoy watching them. Obviously, you know, not just because of Trey Turner, but, you know, their lineup is just so fun to watch. And I just love watching, you know, good baseball, good matchups. I mean, there's just nothing like it.
Yeah, well, I can't argue with that. All right. Well, my one big thing is a little bit more specific, which is the Red Sox got completely destroyed. Was this yesterday? I think it was yesterday. And one fan caught two home runs in the same inning. Can you imagine that? The same guy sitting in the Green Monster That's stands insane. Caught two home runs in the same inning. It's all happening. I think this was just posted. I'm just like following it along because I've been sort of watching the games tick by as we've been recording here tonight. But the five home runs in one inning from the Astros, and one fan caught two of them sitting above the Green Monster. So that might be the coolest thing I've seen in baseball in quite some time. So you should go out and find that clip because you guys will be listening to this tomorrow.
I was to add one more thing, the big thing, just so I don't completely copy Ryan. What's wrong with the Red Sox? Why? They're bad.
I'm like, so glad you said this. Because I'm going to toot my own horn. In our series season predictions, I was the only one who said that they weren't making the playoffs. My buddy is a diehard Red Sox fan. Boston, everything. I kept telling him that the Red Sox suck, that their lineup is going to regress, and that their pitching is absolutely terrible, and the lineup cannot cover it up.
Oh, their pitching sucks. Yeah.
Look what...
This was Eovaldi this evening who gave up five home runs in it.
Yeah, their pitching's dog shit. Like, they have Rich Hill in it. Like, come on.
Despite a great nickname, not a great pitcher at this point in his career.
I forgot how bad their pitching was, so I guess I answered my own question. But, like, I mean, the Red Sox are just so weird because they go from winning the World Series to missing the playoffs to making it back to the ALCS to missing the playoffs and being dog again. I mean, they're just such an odd franchise. I mean, it's like you never really know what you're going to get year to year with them.
I know they always have a tendency to, like, reset it really quickly for one year, then they automatically, like, go right back to the World Series. The only bad thing for them is, like, they were trying to win this year, but teams they expect to be good suck means better deadline because Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers are probably going to be shopped, and that will be very
fun. That will be fun. I think we should tag them with the phrase we came up with for the Nats. We'll call it hashtag weird ass.
They're definitely a weird ass or whatever we said.
Or whatever. Whatever. All right. You guys got anything else before we get out of here?
Go whatever team is playing the Nats, because I want that number one draft
pick. Oh, come on now.
I still
want the Nats to win. I can't quite fight through my homer instincts.
This is like me. I'm fine with them beating divisional rivals just because it's funny to troll them and just saying, oh my God, you just lost a game to this team. But everyone else, I mean, please beat the living shit out of this team. I'm begging you. It's like the SpongeBob meme with Squidward in the bat. Like, please hit me as hard as you can, like, type situation.
All right. Well, I don't know if I can completely agree on that one, but Okay. Well, thank you guys all for listening. We really appreciate it as always. You check us out on Twitter. I am at AWhite7877. You can find Ryan at We Are All Shaq and Tyler at Non-Roster Invite. Make sure you follow the show at Half Street High Heat and the website at halfstreethighheat.com. And of course, the YouTube channel where there's always good and fun videos for you to check out. Make sure you subscribe over there. Thanks for coming on, guys. Have a good night. We'll talk soon.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching aren't bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book.
Let's go Nats, we've got a game to play.